You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A homecoming is being celebrated along the California-Oregon border. The Klamath River flows through the Cascade Mountains in southern Oregon, crossing into California, heading west until reaching the Pacific Ocean in Del Norte County, just south of Crescent City. And a sight generations in the making is now unfolding. Salmon are returning to spawn in waters that have been cut off for more than a century. This milestone began after the largest dam removal project in U.S. history and possibly the world. The Klamath River was once the third largest salmon-producing river in the West Coast, and in recent decades, tribal communities fought to undam and restore hundreds of miles of fish habitat, a battle that our next guest has closely followed for years, describing this largely remote area as a land united by water and divided by people. Stephen Most is the author of River of Renewal, Myth and History in the Klamath Basin, and he'll be at the California Museum this weekend to talk about this historic watershed restoration. Stephen Most joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Vicky.
Well, before we dive in, I just want to acknowledge that a major earthquake has hit an area that we're actually going to be discussing at length. Have you heard from anyone?
I made some calls. Nobody answered the phone, so I don't have any information.
I hope
no news is good news.
Exactly. Yeah. And if people are just learning about this, a magnitude 7.0 earthquake west of Eureka in Humboldt County was reported this morning. There was a tsunami warning. It has since been canceled. So that is good news. It's heading in the right direction. I want to now get to your book, River of Renewal. What led you to write this book originally nearly two decades ago, back in 2006?
In 2000, I started making a documentary film about the Klamath. I thought it would be historical about the Salmon War, which happened in 1978. But all of a sudden, things kept happening. There was what was called the Water War, when because of the decline of salmon, irrigation was cut off in the upper basin where there are farmers and ranchers, and they protested. We had to cover that. And the events went on. The next year, water was given almost unrestricted to the farmers, even during a drought, and the result was a die-off of 70,000 or 80,000 salmon in the estuary, which caused tremendous suffering for everyone who cares about salmon. And of course, that meant a few years later that the salmon that would have been born that year did not exist. And that led to a cutoff of salmon fishery along 700 miles of the coast, of the West Coast. So everybody had suffered by then, and that became the situation which people of very different and historically divided communities in the Klamath Basin decided that they had to figure out a way to live together and to restore the salmon population.
Yeah, and salmon are an incredibly resilient species. So when you have dwindling populations over generations, that is a great indicator when it comes to California of not only climate change, but the impacts of water infrastructure and how it can impact habitat. This area, I've been lucky enough to go up to this area along the northwest corner of California, right along the Oregon border. It is beautifully remote. There are also several tribes in the area. What does salmon mean to the tribal and indigenous communities in this part of the state?
Salmon is really the heart of the Klamath River cultures. Along the Klamath River live California's largest tribes, the Yuroks, who are on the mouth of the river, the Hoopa within Hoopa Valley, along the major tributary, the Trinity, and the Karuk, who are in the mid-Klamath. Their cultures revolve around salmon. Their ceremonies, their world renewal ceremonies are timed to coincide with the salmon run so that one could feed multitudes who gather to celebrate their relationship with salmon and all of life. So having salmon is vital, but in recent years, the tribes have restricted their salmon fishing and in some cases not been able to fish at all, which has huge implications not only for their culture, but for their diets and for their health.
You named the book River of Renewal. Where did that come from?
The religion of the Klamath River tribes is called world renewal, and it's more than a religion. The Karuk term is fixing the world. The ceremonies are world renewal ceremonies. They include the white deerskin dance and the jump dance. These are esoteric. They celebrate the relation of people to the rest of life. But world renewal is more than a religion. It's an ethos. It's a way of life. It includes guidelines, wisdom about how to relate to people, between individuals and between groups. These tribes in the Klamath Basin came there speaking languages from different language families. So for them to get along required a lot of conflict resolution and translation, of course. But they evolved an ecological religion so that they would catch salmon during their ceremonies for only 10 days behind weirs and then let them go because they understood that they had to let salmon spawn for everyone's benefit. That's a kind of wisdom that developed over centuries. But also part of world renewal is literally fixing the world. For example, every winter, the land is disturbed, boulders block streams that salmon need to enter to spawn. So there's physical work to be done and people have to work together. I interviewed a Yurok land manager who talked about the watershed restoration they're doing now that the dams are down. And he said proudly, "We're doing world renewal with bulldozers."
Yeah, and you get these stories and you have this context because of the relationships that you built over the years and decades. I was able to go on a redwood canoe trip with the Yurok tribe a couple years ago, and they actually talked about this potential, at the time, dam removal that has since unfolded and been completed. This is something that these tribes have been working and fighting for decades, 20-some years. And you have been following this along the way year after year. Were you surprised that this actually happened? And not only that it happened, but it was finished ahead of schedule?
I saw the first work toward dam removal back in literally 20 years ago, 2004. But it was clear there were many obstacles along the way. And there were. There were serious reversals. And there were times when it looked like it could not happen at all, but I was hopeful. I was hopeful I'd get to write a second edition of my book, River Renewal, with new chapters on dam removal and watershed restoration. And I'm very happy that that has happened.
Why do you think that happened? Do you think that there has been a change in the political will? I mean, this is something that Governor Newsom has celebrated. Is it just as simple as that, or is there more to it that actually allowed this feat to overcome a two-decade obstacle?
This is an example of people-to-people democracy, people working together to overcome very serious conflicts that have occurred since the Gold Rush. This is an area that had a war of extermination, it was called, against the Shasta tribe. It had the Modoc War. It had serious conflicts over resources, water, salmon, trees, well into this century. And yet, because of the catastrophes of the water cutoff and the salmon die-off and the loss of salmon fishing along the Pacific coast, people, I think, experienced that the tragic awareness that their lives were all connected, that the Klamath Basin is not a place of separate communities with different interests. They had to work together. But the process of coming to a consensus that the dams had to come down was very hard. There were three-day conflict resolution, consensus building sessions. I attended one of them. People who have hated each other categorically all of their lives sat together in small groups and worked out what their hopes were and what their fears were and what was needed for their mutual benefit. It was difficult emotionally, but it was also an inspiring process. And when I saw that 20 years ago, I was hopeful that they would make it through and that the dams would actually be removed.
And it's important to note, from my understanding, the four dams that were demolished weren't used necessarily for flood protection. They essentially have been kind of phased out from their intended purpose. What's unique about these dams? Because people may be thinking about larger dams like Oroville Spillway, or other dams where that would be really concerning if you wanted to remove that from the landscape.
These are four hydroelectric dams that were built at different times, beginning in 1918. Iron Gate Dam, the lowest and largest, was finished in the early 1960s. They produce very little electricity. Owned by Pacific Core, they produce less than 1% of the total electricity that goes through their grid, enough to provide electricity for a small town. And that electricity did not even benefit communities in the Klamath Basin. It went at large into the Pacific Northwest. This is not a flood control dam. In fact, there was a horrendous flood in 1964 that washed out large areas of the Klamath River Basin. And these are old dams, so a lot of sediment had built up there. And not only that, the reservoirs were a breeding ground for toxic algae, so that dogs that went into the river would be poisoned. It was not healthy for people. And it also harmed the aquatic species, including the salmon. So these dams had to go.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Stephen Most, the author of River of Renewal, Myth and History in the Klamath Basin, about the historic watershed restoration following the largest dam removal project in U.S. history along the Klamath River. So I want to get to a site that is more than a century in the making. It actually was ahead of schedule, the site of salmon spawning in southern Oregon along the waters of the Klamath River. It was ahead of schedule. It was a surprise to a lot of people. How did you feel when you learned about it?
The dam removal itself was not ahead of schedule. There were various delays. But what amazed people was that within days of the removal of the last dam, Iron Gate Dam, salmon were seen in the waters above the dam sites. And within weeks, there were wild salmon in Oregon. That hadn't been seen for more than a century. These now are the fall Chinook. The run that spawned in Oregon more than a century ago were the spring Chinook. We haven't seen them enter the river yet. So it'll be very interesting to see if they make it into Oregon. I should give you some information about what has happened to the spring Chinook, because a century ago, more than a century ago, there were three canneries at the estuary of the Klamath River. And they were canning spring Chinook, which are the largest, oiliest, strongest fish. They're the ones that made it to Oregon. There was a record catch of 17,000 fish in one day. Well, since the dams went in, that population of spring Chinook has declined severely. They were counted in their last refuge river, a wild river that flows into the Klamath, the Salmon River. This year's count was 115 fish.
Wow.
So it went from 17,000 salmon caught in a day to 115 counted in an entire year. It's going to take a while for the wild spring Chinook to come back, but I am hopeful, seeing what has happened already since the dams were down in October, that they will make it.
You know, someone may be listening to this who has never been up to that area and is like, okay, that sounds great up in the northern part of California and southern Oregon, but what does this dam removal project mean beyond the Klamath Basin region?
For everyone who loves salmon, it could mean a revival of salmon populations. It will be good for our health. It'll be good for our budgets. Salmon will become more affordable again. I also think, though, that although the Klamath Basin is remote, it's really wonderful to have an area where the indigenous cultures are vital. They're wonderful people. I know a family that has lived in the same place for more than 600 years. And just to see the continuity, generation after generation of wonderful people being born and growing up in that area is something that has inspired me. So I think it's a benefit for all of us to see world renewal in Northern California.
Is this moment purely a time of celebration across the basin? Because you led with there are rival communities, there are competing interests, there were lakefront properties that have since they're not lakefront anymore, and their property values have changed. So I would think that there are some communities who weren't necessarily happy with this dam removal project. Where does that stand today?
I'm glad you raised that issue, Vicky. This is not kumbaya universally in the Klamath Basin. Yes, people who had lakefront property are suddenly facing muddy areas that have no aesthetic value for them, and their property values have declined. People in Siskiyou County have protested dam removal ever since it was on the horizon. But it's also the case that the farmers and ranchers in the Upper Basin feel, many of them feel alienated from this process. The consensus meetings that I referred to led to a formal agreement to take down the dams that was going to be made the basis for a law that backed by Oregon Congressman Greg Walden. He had promised that. Negotiations for 3 years went, managed to figure out a way to ensure water supply for farmers on a year-by-year basis. But that required the Congress voting to allocate $500 million for this project. And by the time it reached Congress, the Tea Party was in control. The Republicans didn't want to give anything that looked like a win to Obama, and they killed the bill. And what resulted was an entirely different way to get the dams down that left the farmers out. It was a disaster for the farmers because they rely on having water. They can't get loans for the year's planting unless they know they're going to have water so that things will grow. So they're very disappointed. Also, the Klamath tribes, as part of their deal within the consensus agreement, would have received funds to bring their land, a large portion of land back. Those tribes, their land base was terminated in the 1950s. And although they regained recognition and sovereignty in the 80s, they don't have a land base anymore. So this was also a severe disappointment for the Klamath tribes. I'm hoping that some future political initiative will restore some kind of guarantee of water for the farmers and also help the Klamath tribes regain their land base.
Yeah, I think there's hardly anything that is a 100% win, especially when you're talking about water infrastructure. There are consequences whether you're building it or whether you're demolishing it. Finally, Stephen, you're going to be in Sacramento at the California Museum this weekend for an event called Klamath Unbound. You are one of many speakers. What can people expect this weekend? What are you excited about?
I think it'll be a lot of fun. There will be a singing group from the Klamath River. They'll screen my film, River of Renewal. There will be basket makers. There's a Basket Makers Association of California Indians, and that is the great art of California, basketry. Some of the best basket makers will be in the California Museum. There will be, besides the films and the basket making and the fry bread that we'll get to eat on Saturday, there will be a couple of panels, one about dam removal and watershed restoration, and the other about traditional ecological knowledge. And a particular example of that is cultural fire. Fire lighting was outlawed for a century, and only in the last few years, within the last decade, has it been revived by the Klamath tribes. So Elizabeth Azuz, who's a Yurok fire lighter, will speak about the return of cultural fire and its importance in the restoration of the Klamath watershed.
Oh, that's going to be a fun and busy event on Saturday. A lot going on in the very, very best way. Stephen, thank you for taking the time to join us and share your second edition of your book.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
Stephen Most is the author of River of Renewal, Myth and History in the Klamath Basin. He will be at the California Museum this weekend to talk about this historic watershed restoration. Still ahead, art is more than just a visual or audio medium. We'll learn about a new interactive art exhibit in downtown Sacramento that is engaging all five senses. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.